Be encouraged this hour. God keeps his promises.
I say all of this to say to you today, and you be the judge. Jesus said, when I come back, it's going to be like it was in the days of Noah, where man was thinking evil constantly. Jesus said, I'm going to come back at a time when it's like Sodom and Gomorrah.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, radio for the remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. Today, Jan visits with author Steve Miller about his fascinating book, Foreshadows, 12 Mega Clues That Jesus' Return Is Nearer Than Ever. We think we have an inspiring hour for you. Here is today's programming.
There's an Antichrist is coming. There's going to be a temple in Jerusalem that's coming. All of these things are coming to head. It's not a surprise that Russia's in the news every day. It's not a surprise that you have all these things going on just north of the northern border of Israel. Folks, everything is coming together exactly as the Bible says it would. And then you look at this with Israel entering into these relationships with their surrounding neighbors. Folks, this is absolutely remarkable. I can't help but encourage you. Listen, as we start putting all things together, if you take the Bible, we start putting the things together that are in the Bible regarding the signs of the last days. Maybe you have friends that say, hey, you can't believe any of that stuff. It's just a bunch of conspiracy theories, blah, blah, blah. Listen, the Bible gives us these things so that we can know. It was in 2 Chronicles with ancient Israel, where they understood the signs so they knew what Israel needed to do. The Bible gives us signs or events so that we can No, Jesus even said to his disciples, see, I told you these things beforehand. Why? So that we would know. And there's hundreds of signs of the second coming of Christ. And Israel, an antichrist, a coming temple, and all of these other events taking place at the same time. And then we look at this with Saudi Arabia. Folks, this is absolutely remarkable. I want to say this. In the words of Jesus, Luke chapter 21, when you see these things begin to take place, look up and lift up your head because your redemption draws near.
So glad you can join me for Understanding the Times Radio today. That was Pastor Tom Hughes, and I just played that as a little tease because he summed up things in a minute and a half there. And you know, if you listen regularly to this program, that we do highlight so many signs of the times, events that foreshadow the end of the church age. So to add emphasis to this topic, we began carrying author Steve Miller's fairly new book, Foreshadows, 12 Mega Clues That Jesus' Return Is Nearer Than Ever. Now, we're not going to get to all 12, but we're going to certainly talk in general about this topic, and we're going to hit some bullet points among those 12 points. Steve will be with me for the hour when Steve Miller is not writing. He's an editor at Harvest House Publishers in Oregon. Steve has been hearing impaired all of his life, so his wife, Becky, is signing for him this hour. Steve Miller, welcome to the program for the first time.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be with you and your audience.
Steve, I said to you off air that I've probably read 100 and perhaps more books talking and chronicling what's going on in our day from a prophetic perspective, and you have put them all into 12 bullet points in your 12 mega clues. I'm very touched by the way you handled each and every category, and so I just want to hit a few highlights of categories, and then I'm going to play some sound bites to complement our discussion. But let me just ask you this, because you open the whole book with the importance of the rebirth of Israel in 1948. We call that the super sign. Before 1948, many church denominations doubted that this rebirth was even possible, and that goes before your time and before my time, but hard to imagine a time when Christians weren't thrilled with the fact that Israel has been reborn, but there was a time when people never thought it could happen.
Yes, there were many people who thought it could never happen. Even some fairly conservative biblical scholars, as recently as the mid-1800s, when they wrote their commentary and they talked about the passages that spoke of Israel's regathering, they couldn't see how it would happen because the Jewish people were scattered all across the earth with no galvanizing factor that would help bring them together. So they couldn't figure out, well, how does this all fit with what's supposed to happen? How is this all going to come about? So people had big questions about it. And one of the reasons that we see a lot of people take prophecy and allegorize it or create symbolic interpretations for it is that they couldn't make sense of what these prophecies were saying about Israel coming back and becoming a nation again. But God keeps his promises.
Yes.
And just as we read in Ezekiel 36 and in Ezekiel 37 about how he was going to bring his people back into their land and about how he was going to prosper them, and how Isaiah even says that they would become a nation in one day, mm-hmm. which happened on the day when they declared their independence, May 14th, 1948. All of these details were laid out for us in Scripture. We just couldn't see it happen.
Yes.
And this confirms all the more what a miraculous God we have, the ability he has, the power he has, his sovereign ability to bring about all details of prophecy and bring them together in ways that we might not perceive. But yes, it happened. And now that Israel is a nation again, there is a stage on which the end times are able to play out.
Yes, very well said. And I think this reveals, Steve, the importance to the listener is that God keeps his promises. This should encourage the Christian. If he keeps his promises to Israel, he will keep his promise to the believer as well. By the way, my audience, I think some of you are certainly aware that Israel is probably heading into its fifth election in just over 3 years. So there's great instability going on in Israel. And my understanding is that the Biden administration is going to do all they can to block the return of Bibi Netanyahu, who could possibly come back and be prime minister again. Folks, here is what Steve Miller covers in the book Foreshadows: the rise of globalism, number two, the trends toward a one-world government, number three, the struggle to build a united European empire, four, the spread of all invasive technology and surveillance, five, the progression of a one-world economy, six, the descent into moral and spiritual corruption, seven, the proliferation of deception, eight, the assault on truth, nine, the increase of Christian persecution, 10, the explosion of hostilities toward Israel and the Jewish people, 11, the preparation for a new temple in Jerusalem, and 12, the forming of a coalition to destroy Israel. Those are the 12 that Steve Miller feels are the foreshadows, the 12 mega clues that Jesus' return is nearer than ever. Steve, I cover globalism on this program almost weekly. I don't want to dwell here, but we have to reference it. To do that, I'd like to play a short clip. It is of Amir Sarfati. Of course, you, Steve, are with Harvest House, and Amir has a number of excellent books through Harvest House. But Amir here is commenting on the new perception of government since COVID. And then I want to come back and tie it to the things you've written about.
Yes, we see a race for one world government, don't we? Look what's going to happen. And now I'm not a prophet. I come from a non-profit organization. Listen, but I can tell you, trust in governments now is being lost. Not only here, because of a certain mental capacity of... No, it's all over the world. Go to the UK, go to France, go to Holland, go to Belgium, go to the Scandinavian countries, go to Israel. We have a new government, the government of change. What a change. Oh. Oy vey, we say in Hebrew, or Yiddish. Look, the world, stop trusting governments. Go to see what's going on in Australia. What I'm trying to say is that this system of government controlling one country is losing its essence in the eyes of hundreds of millions of people, and they are going to look for something different, something new, a change. And guess what? Before everything falls apart, an introduction to a one-world government will appeal to all of them before we're all out of here.
Steve Miller, I think what's being said, and you emphasize it in your book, is that global problems require global solutions. So let's change the way the world is governed. And you're observing that process, and so am I.
What's interesting is the World Economic Forum has been a key prompter of changing the way the world thinks about itself. The World Economic Forum is a group of people, very elite scholars, celebrities, news people, government officials, top executives and CEOs from all over the world. They gather together, they have their summit, and their take on the world is we all live on one planet. All the problems that we face in this world are shared. We're not in isolation from one another. We're interdependent on one another. So we need to solve our problems together. When COVID-19 came along, all these governments started responding in different ways to how to deal with the problem. And people were scared. They didn't know how to react. And they went to their governments and they said, help us. We need protection. We need safety. And the governments weren't sure how to do it. In all of that, Klaus Schwab, who founded the World Economic Forum, he said we can't be having a splintered response to a global problem like this. And he said that the way the globe responded to COVID-19 was a disaster. He said that we saw a failure of global leadership, and what is needed is for all of us to work together. We need to tear up the script for how governance is done, and we need to write a new script, and we need to work together to revamp all aspects of our society and economy. He said this is the only way we're going to be able to achieve a different outcome in response to world crises. So COVID-19 exposed the fact that our world is very divided in the way it responds to problems. And the World Economic Forum and the United Nations are saying we need to work together, and let's do that. But it requires cooperation and collaboration from everyone. Every successive crisis that happens from here onward, we're going to see the same reaction. And governments, what they will do is they will start leaning on a few key voices to guide everyone through the problem. And that's what we saw happen with COVID. Governments started leaning on the World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, and they started leaning on these few voices and saying, okay, what should we do? And these few voices started taking over and saying, this is how we need to get over COVID. This is how we need to get our way through this problem. Because of this, government overreach has become normal. People are becoming accustomed to the idea that if we're going to have safety, if we're going to have protection and we want it from our government, we're going to have to be willing to give up some of our freedoms.
Yes. Very well summarized. I totally agree. I'm just moving on to another category. You have 12, and it won't be possible to hit 12, but I'm trying to pick some highlights because I have read the book. And you focus on technology and artificial intelligence. In the natural, what we're witnessing, Steve, is terrifying. I mean, Big Brother, 1984, is going on here in 2022. Big Brother's watching us at all times and surveilling us to make sure people are complying. And of course, that's going to get even more intense as we move along here, and certainly in the tribulation, though the church is not in the tribulation. Already they know what we like. They know our friends. They know our family members. They know what we like to purchase. They know our politics. They know our spiritual values. And then we have this ESG, this social credit system, that is on the horizon. And again, I can only spend moments on it because I've talked about it on this program probably a dozen times. This ESG system, it's the ultimate in Big Brother. Many people feel that it's going to be employed. As a matter of fact, it's already being employed in some areas of the country and of the world. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yes. In China, they have a social credit system, which is kind of a similar principle. And the social credit system there is everyone starts out with the same score. And then you are either awarded points or points are subtracted from your total score, depending on how you behave. So the government is able to coerce people to conform to its wishes by rewarding people for behaving in a certain way or punishing them for behaving in a certain way. So the government will give you privileges or take away privileges. And this social credit system in China is all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. It involves all of life. It involves everything we do. But we're starting to see this appear in other ways, like you say, the ESG credit system or what's happening in Italy right now. There's a city in Italy that has created a social credit system just for shaping people's behaviors around climate change. So they want people to behave in certain ways that coordinate with green policies. So they reward people or punish people based on that. All of Europe is watching that. And it's only natural that what's going to happen is governments are going to say, look, these systems are a way that we can get people to cooperate and stay in line with our wishes. And so they're going to make more use of them. The surveillance technology makes it possible for a government to electronically supervise or oversee everything that's going on. Dictators know that if they can watch what everyone's doing and they can electronically track what everyone's doing, they can exercise greater control over their people. And greater control over your people is controlling their mind, the information they have access to. And basically what it means is greater control for them. And all of this makes sense because we know that in Revelation 13:7, it talks about how ultimately the Antichrist will have control of the entire world. The one way he's going to be able to do that is to have the kind of surveillance technology that's available to us now for him to be able to carry that out. Yeah.
And I maintain, I don't think we could have an Antichrist system 100 years ago, maybe even not 50 years ago, because the artificial intelligence and the technology was not where it needed to be. It has to be where it is today and probably going forward, and that is very, very sophisticated. You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line from the West Coast, Steve Miller, author of the book Four Shadows, 12 Mega Clues That Jesus' Return Is Nearer Than Ever. He is a senior editor at Harvest House Publishers as well. And I'm just going to play a short clip here to complement our discussion by Jeff Kinley, good friend of mine. We just brought Jeff to Minneapolis about a month ago to give a presentation on the topic that we're discussing today, by the way.
A lot of people in this discussion about the end times, and listen, I think for most people, they read the book of Revelation and it's confusing for them. They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to understand it. And they're trying to put these pieces together because prophecy is one of those challenging things where there are different parts of Old and New Testament scripture that you're piecing together to understand or to try to understand what's going to happen. What do you think are some of the most compelling scriptures that back a pre-tribulation rapture?
Well, I think one of them has to do with John 14, Jesus Christ using this Jewish wedding metaphor, promised his disciples that he would leave them, but then he would come back one day to take them to heaven. And the whole imagery of a groom snatching up his bride, taking her to heaven for a celebration. But then you get into 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18, which really kind of gives us a slow-mo version of the rapture itself. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 10 tells us that we are delivered from the wrath that is coming. And of course, the context of 1 Thess and 2 Thessalonians really is the end times. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 9 says that we are not destined for God's end times wrath, but we are destined for salvation. The word salvation just means deliverance. And then you got, of course, Revelation 3:10, where Jesus promises the church that she'll be kept from the hour of testing that's coming upon the whole world, like has never been before. So there's a distinction between being kept from something and being kept in something. It's kind of like when we went through hurricanes down on the Gulf Coast and we lived down there, we kind of rode out the hurricane. That's kind of like being kept in the hurricane, but some people fled the city and went north. They were kept from the hurricane. So I think God promises to keep us from the hurricane of his wrath that's coming in the end times. And then Billy, I would just say also is when you look at the portrayal of the bride of Christ, of the church in Revelation, you have the word church mentioned about 22 times in the book of Revelation, 19 times it's mentioned in chapters 1 through 3, and a couple of times later than that. But during the time that the tribulation is portrayed, the church is not mentioned even once. In fact, she's portrayed as being in heaven during that time. So that's another reason why we would lean to the pre-tribulational rapture view.
That was a little caveat on the importance of the pre-trib rapture here. But Steve, I haven't quite left the technology angle that you write about, because I have in front of me a very credible article headlined, MasterCard Launches Tech That Lets You Pay With Your Face or Hand in Stores. Let me read two short paragraphs. MasterCard is piloting new technology that lets shoppers make payments with just their face or hand at the checkpoint. And then it says, the company on Tuesday launched a program for retailers to offer biometric payment methods like facial recognition and fingerprint scanning. At checkout, users will be able to authenticate their payment by showing their face or palm of their hand instead of swiping their card. The point, Steve Miller, is again, this mark of the beast technology is moving forward at a speed I didn't think I would see.
Yes, you bring up the mark of the beast. What's fascinating is how in Revelation, when it explains the kind of world that people are going to live in, and it talks about the mark of the beast, it zeroes in on economic activity. It talks about how the mark of the beast will be used to determine who will be allowed to buy, who will be allowed to sell, who will be allowed to make a living. People who cannot carry on economic activity will not be able to make a living. Oftentimes, people ask, well, what exactly will the mark of the beast be? We know from scripture that the original Greek word talking about the mark being on the right hand or on the forehead, we know it's going to be a service mark. But we do know, too, that there will be the very technology that you were just talking about, the technology that's able to back up that, yes, this person is a credible member of the Antichrist society. This technology is just mind-boggling. For example, people can be identified now by aiming a laser at their heart, and you can read their cardiac heartbeat from 200 yards away. You can identify people in that way. All of it comes down to being able to identify people, and artificial intelligence dramatically speeds up the process of being able to go through hundreds of thousands of millions of files of information about people. So yes, the power that all of us will give to the Antichrist and his government is mind-boggling.
It is. And you do, Steve, talk about the new digital money system that is on the horizon, a whole new money system. And again, I've talked about it on this program. Some call it blockchain, but the point is cash is going to go away. And then back on March 9th, Mr. Biden signed an order to get the digital system off the ground. And I keep advising my listeners to get acquainted with the CBDC. That stands for Central Bank Digital Currency. Give me your thoughts on this, Steve.
It's interesting that you should mention the executive order that Biden signed, because the language used in that executive order is that the government wants to ensure the responsible development of digital assets. He specifically said we must take strong steps to reduce the risk that digital assets could pose to consumers, investors, and business protection.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting. He says we must take strong steps. This is something where the government feels like it must intervene very much. Just last month, Congress also introduced a new bill that will reshape how the whole cryptocurrency world operates here in the United States. It wants to introduce a bigger level of government involvement, government having say over what can be done and what cannot be done in the cryptocurrency world. But basically what it comes down to is this: cryptocurrencies can be handled anonymously, and a lot of people who use those currencies like that. But the government doesn't like that. The government wants to keep track of what people are doing with their money. The government wants to be able to make sure people are paying their taxes and not using their money in ways that the government doesn't approve of. One very convenient way of doing that is by having central banks issue these central bank digital currency, where everyone would have a digital wallet and the money would be issued by the central bank, and the central bank would be overseen by the government. China already has this system in place. It's still rolling out. It's not at 100% yet, but China is rolling out a complete system where it has a digital yuan and everybody's given a digital wallet. And the government's expectation is you do all of your transactions through this and nothing else. And they have forbidden all private cryptocurrencies. The World Economic Forum, which is globalist in its viewpoints, has said that it is absolutely imperative that cryptocurrencies be regulated, because there's over 18,000 cryptocurrencies out there. And people say, well, that's good, but governments are saying, no, that's not good. We want control of what's going on out there, and we want say over how people handle their money. So there are now 80 different countries in the world that are exploring the use of cryptocurrencies. Some of them are moving forward. India is working on developing a digital currency now, and is very soon, or could be close to, prohibiting all private forms of cryptocurrencies. As we see governments taking more control over how transactions are handled and it's done digitally, we can expect them to have bigger say over how we use our money.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I think that the central banks, the system that we're talking about, I mean, the government will be able to turn off and on our digital wallets. Plus, they're going to know what we're buying. They're going to know every single sale in our lives. How much of this the church sees, Steve, we don't know. This is going to explode during the tribulation, the seven-year time of Jacob's trouble. Church not experiencing that, but we're seeing a tremendous setup for that.
Yes, we're seeing it right now. We've seen multiple instances of GoFundMe funds that were attempted to be raised for some conservative cause or other, and then it's shut down because the government doesn't agree with, or the tech company doesn't agree with, supporting a conservative cause. We saw what happened with the trucker strike up in Canada, how Trudeau threatened to shut down the bank accounts of the truckers. So yes, governments can shape our behaviors if they have control over how we're able to use our finances.
Folks, you can learn a whole lot more by reading Steve Miller's book, Foreshadows, 12 Mega Clues That Jesus' Return Is Nearer Than Ever. It is in my online store. It's in my various newsletters. You can call my office. I highly recommend it. He goes into 12 categories and then many, many subcategories. In a few instances here, I'm talking about some of the more subcategories, but it's very well researched. I strongly encourage you to take a look at the book. Just a quick heads up here, my audience, that another Understanding the Times event is coming up Thursday, August the 4th. This is our every other month Understanding the Times night where we gather in a suburb of Minneapolis, Brooklyn Park. And for all of you living in faraway places, we live stream it at no cost. On Thursday, August the 4th, Michelle Bachman will be our guest. And we're going to talk about some of the very issues Steve Miller and I are discussing this hour. My goodness, you talk about government overreach and digital currency and things like this. Our whole way of life could change in the coming weeks and months. Literally, everything we do could change. Why don't you mark that down? You can live stream it at MarkHenryMinistries.com, MarkHenryMinistries.com. I'll be there, Michelle, Pastor Mark Henry. It's at Revive Church in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. That's evangelical free. We'll go about 7 to 9, no tickets, just plenty of room, so come on out that particular evening, and then we archive it under video at olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org, so you can watch it at your leisure if you're not available the evening of Thursday, August the 4th. When I come back, I'm going to continue on with Steve Miller, because we still have, my goodness, he's got 12 mega clues. I think we've hit two. So we'll try to hit a few more bullet points in part two of my programming. So please stick with us and don't go away.
We hope you'll stay in touch with us online through olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Write us through the mail at Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. In the age of fake news and false teaching, thank you for trusting Olive Tree Ministries. We talk about it all the time on Understanding the Times Radio. Global government is coming. And now a new book by Dr. Mark Hitchcock and Jeff Kinley document just how it will take place. Their book, Global Reset, Do Current Events Point to the Antichrist and His Worldwide Empire, will help you understand the biblical outline for this to transpire in the not-too-distant future. The winds of change are blowing. Tectonic shifts are underway at every level. How might this affect you and those you love? Find the book in our online store, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Or call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We charge no shipping in the U.S. and Canada. For biblical insight to all that is happening today, check out the book, Global Reset, Do Current Events Point to the Antichrist and His Worldwide Empire, today.
When you reject God, by default, you end up rejecting truth. And when you reject truth, you lose your ability to even know what's reality and what's not reality anymore. And we are living in a world where there are a lot of people who live in some kind of imagined alternate reality.
Right.
And we think, how can you possibly arrive at that conclusion? And it just shows the power of the blindness that Satan brings upon the world through deception.
We know you can't always be by a radio, so catch Understanding the Times Radio at your convenience online. Watch the video version of the program or listen to the audio at olivetreeviews.org, then to complete archives on YouTube, on Rumble, on LightSource, and on his channel, Christian TV. Now here are Jan Markell and Steve Miller to wrap up today's programming.
Take a look around and see the signs of the times. there are famines, pestilences, an increased number of natural disasters, and rumors of war everywhere. The final prophecies of the Bible are being fulfilled before our very eyes. Christ is soon to return.
Yes, we have the obvious signs about the last days. We know men will be lovers of self. We're told that dangerous times will come, and there will be famines and pestilence and rumors of war. But did you know that markers are a sign of the last days? People who question the coming of the Lord are a sign of the last days. Where is this Jesus you speak of? They'll say. He hasn't shown up for hundreds of years. So where is he? That's what a mocker will say. Each and every day, we are drawing closer and closer to the return of the Lord.
Don't let the concept of time fool you. The Amplified translation for James chapter 4, verse 14 says, "Yet you do not know the least thing about what may happen in your life tomorrow, what is secure in your life. You are merely a vapor, like a puff of smoke or a wisp of steam for a cooking pot that is visible for a little while and then vanishes into thin air."
I would like to draw your attention to 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 to 4. The Amplified translation says, "First of all, know without any doubt that mockers will come in the last days, with their mocking, following after their own human desires and saying, 'Where is the promise of his coming? What has become of it? For ever since the fathers fell asleep in death, all things have continued exactly as they did from the beginning of creation.'" A mocker is someone who jeers and scoffs at something. How many mockers do we have in this present day?
Welcome back. I'm glad you can join Understanding the Times Radio today. And just a quick acknowledgement here about the passing of our friend, Dr. Ed Heinsohn, back on July 2nd. And I have been posting items to my website under headlines to keep folks apprised. But this is the first time I could do so on air. He was a frequent radio guest and spoke at my annual conference in 2013. Ed Heinsohn was a personal friend, advisor, confidant, and theological go-to source for me. Many are grieving his loss. Ed Heinsohn was 80 years old, again passed away July 2nd. I'm so pleased to have on the line from the West Coast, Steve Miller. He's one of the senior editors at Harvest House, but he's also an author. And I'm so pleased to be able to carry his brand new book, Foreshadows, 12 Mega Clues That Jesus' Return Is Nearer Than Ever. And Dr. Ron Rhodes says this on the cover, a good friend of the ministry here, "A prophetic tour de force, unquestionably the most important prophecy book of the year." And I kind of agree. And folks, you know we carry dozens. So when I say that, it means something. So we've been looking at some of the 12 mega clues. I won't read them through again, but there are 12 bullet points and then some subpoints that Steve analyzes and documents very carefully. Remember, the Pharisees were chastised by Jesus because they didn't know the signs of his first coming. And I think he definitely wants the church today to know the signs of his, first of all, return in the clouds, known as the rapture. And then, of course, the church is going to be escaping that tribulation. Then we come back, of course, in the second coming. We're just able to hit on a few talking points this hour, and I'm trying to play some sound bites that complement the discussion I'm having with Steve Miller. Steve, I'm going to one of your categories that you extensively write about, and I'm doing this. In other words, there are 12 points. I'm only able to hit on three or four, and I'm picking one that affects every single listener, and that is this descent into a moral and spiritual corruption. And I think a lot of my listeners are just weary of, let's say, how about drag queen story hour? They're tired of it. They're tired of seeing the aberrations that are going on in society. And I think you bring this out in your book, that God declared the world very good in Genesis 1:31. And in Genesis 6, God had to destroy the earth. That's what happened in such a short period of time Everything was good, it was perfect, and it so deteriorated that he had to wipe out every living thing except for Noah's family on the earth. Steve, do you see some comparisons to those days of Noah and what's going on today?
Very much so. And Jesus said it would be that way. When Jesus taught the disciples in Matthew 24 about what it would be like in the end times, he said it will be as in the days of Noah. And as we go back and we look at Genesis 6 and we read what it was like in the days of Noah, Scripture tells us that every thought and every intent of the human heart was continually evil. It was always evil. There was no good. And it's going to be that way as we approach the end time. During the end times itself, during the tribulation itself, after the restraining influence of the Holy Spirit has been taken away, when the church has been raptured away, and there is no restraining influence, we can imagine that literally hell is going to be unleashed on earth. It's going to be worse than we can even imagine.
Yes.
Already we're seeing in our day what we read about in Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20, where it talks about, woe to those who call evil good and who call good evil. And we're seeing that in some very astounding ways. For example, when the Supreme Court came out with this recent ruling on Roe versus Wade, many of the pro-abortion people who were protesting the Supreme Court's ruling were saying that abortion is an act of love. And we listen to that, we go, how can you possibly arrive at that conclusion that killing a baby is an act of love? And then you also have the Shout Out Your Abortion movement.
Right.
There's a website online called Shout Out Your Abortion where women are encouraged to write about their positive abortion experiences. And one of the things that we read in a book that they published is that they say that abortion should be celebrated in the same way that a baby's birth is celebrated. So you live in a world where our values are completely upside down. And I'm just citing one area. You've mentioned another, the drag queen hour. We're absolutely repulsed by the level of depravity.
Just the whole pronoun issue. Let me just play a 20-second clip here. This is a medical student who's going to talk about people giving birth.
Can we please stop saying pregnant women? So I'm a third-year medical student, and all throughout medical school, I've had a ton of lectures associate pregnancy only with women and people who use she, her pronouns. And I'm just here to keep it short and sweet to say, not all pregnant patients identify as women or with she, her pronouns.
Again, this is leftist lunacy, but I never thought I would see it get to this extent where men can give birth, and I could give other illustrations of this insanity. But Steve, this is the new normal. Now, how would this compare to the days of Noah? We don't know. They didn't have technology back then. They didn't have ways of spreading their message on television and internet and all of that back then. But nonetheless, I think the mindset is pretty similar back then versus now.
Yes, I would say the mindset is very similar to now. The example that you just cited where there's the idea that men can be pregnant and can give birth is an absolute refusal to accept reality. And basically what happens is, Romans 1 talks about this. Romans chapter 1, we read about how when people reject God, ultimately they also reject truth. The two go together. When you reject God, by default, you end up rejecting truth. And when you reject truth, you lose your ability to even know what's reality and what's not reality anymore. And we are living in a world where there are a lot of people who live in some kind of imagined alternate reality.
Right.
And we think, how can you possibly arrive at that conclusion? And it just shows the power of the blindness that Satan brings upon the world through deception.
The Bible is clear that the last days generation, it's going to be, if it feels good, do it type generation. It's going to be me first. It's all about the pronouns are me, myself, and I. And we're seeing that we're the selfie generation, people endlessly taking pictures of themselves. But all of this, again, we don't bring this up, Steve, to be depressing. We bring it up because the Bible predicts all of this, but it predicts all of this for a generation known as the last generation of the church age. We've got lots of years ahead of us, folks, because we have a 7-year tribulation and a 1,000-year millennium still up ahead where we won't be here for the tribulation, but we come back for that millennium. But the point is, time is winding down. And I think the point that you're making, and again, the book is foreshadows 12 mega clues that Jesus' return is nearer than ever, that we can take some of the aberrations. And I don't want to make it sound like we can turn it into good news, because there's no way to make abortion into good news. But what we can conclude is the Bible says these would be characteristics of the last days. And Jesus is coming not only any year, but I think any minute.
Yes. What's so encouraging about reading Bible prophecy, even the negative things, when Jesus said it would be like as it was in the days of Noah, and even where we're told that men will be lovers of themselves, and even when we're told about how debauched the world will become and how chaotic things will be, as we read that, we realize God told us this would happen. And it's confirmation that God is in control. It's confirmation that he foresaw all of this. It's confirmation that we can trust what his word had to say. There's just not the bad news of Bible prophecy, which is everything that's going wrong in our world today, but there's all the good news of Bible prophecy as well, which promises that Christ is coming back, that judgment will come. How many of us as Christians, we look at what's going on in the world today, people are all talking about social justice, and they're talking about this kind of justice or that kind of justice, and we're thinking, this is all unbiblical, this is all wrong. We know from Scripture that God is going to exercise his justice, and that there will come a kingdom in which Christ rules and reigns. Things will be done his way for 1,000 years here on earth, and then after that, heaven. So there is a good side of all of this in prophecy that should encourage us, that it's exciting to think that we live in prophetically significant times right now. There are many times I've thought how exciting it must have been to live at the time of Christ's first coming and to see prophecy fulfilled. Well, we can have all the more reason to be looking at Scripture and saying, wow, how exciting. We are seeing God at work.
I'm moving on to another of your mega clues, and I think I'll introduce it with a quick soundbite. And let me just say this, and the topic here would be the coming temple in Jerusalem. And folks, if you're watching the news at all, and of course it's only a select few outlets that are going to talk about this, heavily Christian, by the way, we know there's controversy in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. And let me just introduce that by saying that in 1967, the Six-Day War, Israel recaptured Jerusalem. And General Moshe Dayan back then, he actually captured the Temple Mount. What did he do? In a goodwill gesture to Muslims, I'm sorry, folks, it never works. In a goodwill gesture to Muslims, he handed the Temple Mount over to Islam to be defiled as it has been for these number of years now. Nonetheless, many in Israel, religious Jews for sure, are eagerly looking forward to a Jewish temple that's going to sit on that site.
50 years later, that's changed, with the Temple Institute preparing blueprints and gathering official temple elements, such as the priestly garments. Richmond is also dispelling myths about the temple on today's digital loudspeaker, YouTube.
Let's start at the beginning. What was the Holy Temple really all about?
All of this means talk of rebuilding the temple is no longer considered a fringe idea.
Today, there is a lobby in the Knesset of how many members of Knesset that are constantly speaking about Jewish rights to pray on the Temple Mount. There are members of Knesset that actually talk about the rebuilding of the Holy Temple. Do you understand that 20 years ago, these people wouldn't have been given a moment on primetime television in Israel to say these things? They would have been laughed out.
So a few years ago, this was considered fringe?
Zealots. Lunatics, peculiar. Today it's mainstream.
One of those members is Yehuda Glick.
10 years ago, there was not a single member of Knesset who ascended the Temple Mount. Today, we have 20 of the Knesset members who are interested in ascending Temple Mount, praying on the Temple Mount, and are part in the battle for the redemption of the Temple Mount and for bringing the Temple Mount back into the center of the next step in the redemption process.
Richmond sees the temple through the eyes of the prophet Isaiah, who wrote 3,000 years ago that God's house would be a house of prayer for all nations.
It means basically that there's a God in the world and that the best is yet to come, and that we are so connected to him and to each other and to that purpose and to all humanity. And it's just a wonderful privilege to be here with you today, to be looking out over Jerusalem and to realize that we're living in probably the most important time in history. If you believe in the God of Israel and you see his hand on his people and you understand the tremendous changes that have gone on over the years, you see that the one who brought us this far isn't finished and will keep his promises.
Steve Miller, you write about this in your book, but here's what jumped out at me in that clip, and I've seen other videos and actually read some other books on it, but Yehuda Glick there was being interviewed. He very bluntly said, what we believe, and that would be the restoration of the temple on its proper site, which is the Dome of the Rock currently sitting there, the Islamic element has to go. How that happens, I think it'll happen under the Antichrist, that he'll cause a miracle for that to go and the temple to be built. But as Rabbi Glick says, just a few years ago, what he was talking about was fringe. Now, it's still not across the board, but it is certainly common today to have Jews in Israel start to talk about this forthcoming temple.
Yes, we see some prophetically significant activity taking place with regard to the Temple Mount. As you said, the Temple Institute has been very active creating the implements for the temple. They have a beautiful, huge menorah that's ready to go. Mm-hmm. They've been creating the priestly garments. They've been training priests. They have the architectural plan. And we know that there has to be a temple because Daniel, in Daniel 9:27, he prophesied that the Antichrist would make a seven-year covenant with Israel. And at the halfway point of that covenant, the Antichrist would commit an act of abomination. When Jesus taught on the end time to the disciples, he brought up that same act of abomination as well in Matthew 24:15. He said, when you see the abomination of desolation take place, flee, for the Antichrist is going to come after you. And then the Apostle Paul provided further elaboration in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where he talks about the Antichrist entering the holy place and declaring himself to be God, which will be the abomination of desolation. So we have Daniel, Jesus, and the Apostle Paul all talking about the presence of a temple on the Temple Mount during the tribulation when this will happen. So how will that Dome of the Rock be moved? How will things change to where Israel can build its temple? Well, one very likely scenario is this. In Ezekiel 38, we read about a future invasion that's going to take place against the nation of Israel. A group of predominantly Muslim nations are going to get together, and they're going to invade from the north, and they're going to attack Israel. And in the description of the attack, God says that they will be as clouds over the nation, meaning that this is going to be an overwhelming attack, and Israel will seem to have no chance of surviving. In all the warfare that's taking place, it's very possible that things could happen to where the structures on the Temple Mount are somehow destroyed, whether intentionally or not. It's possible that in this massive invasion, the Temple Mount will be hit and the structures will be flattened. The other possibility is, we know that in Ezekiel 38, God says, I will come down and I will destroy Israel's attacker, and the world will know that I am God. When these Muslim invaders are destroyed, the defeat is going to be so great that the Antichrist, whose headquarters will be based in Europe, will be able to come to Israel and say, look, you've been attacked. I'm going to come offering you peace. I'm going to give you a seven-year peace treaty. And Israel, having just come out of being invaded, will say, yes, we're willing to go along with that. And the Antichrist will then be able to say to Israel, here, the Temple Mount is yours. You can build your temple.
I totally agree. I think that's a very, very likely scenario that's actually building as we speak. You're listening to Understanding the Times. Folks, I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line from Oregon, Steve Miller, author. He's an editor at Harvest House Publishers. And we're carrying his book, Foreshadows, 12 Mega Clues That Jesus' Return Is Nearer Than Ever, in my online store, in my newsletters. Call my office, Central Time. We'll get this book out to you as quickly as possible. It's one of the most comprehensive and well-organized that I have read. Steve, I'm referring to something you've written here because you write about the rise of Europe and the fact that the Antichrist probably will come out of Europe. I think that's clear. Others would debate that. After the rapture of the church, and you write about the 10 kings that are going to arise and to become very, very prominent, and the Antichrist is certainly on the scene at that point in time. He's just made a covenant, Daniel 9:27, with Israel, so the Antichrist is there, but there are still 10 kings involved. And then at the halfway point of the tribulation, the Antichrist is going to say, I'm in control of the entire world. I'm going to be the world ruler, the 10 kings. He's done with them. But here's the problem, is that some mistakenly think that because the Antichrist doesn't get very aggressive in his role until the midpoint of the tribulation, that therefore the church is going to even go through that first half of the tribulation, and there'll be a mid-tribulation rapture, whereas I think we need to emphasize again to the audience that first of all, the moment the church is gone and the lid is removed on evil, and the tribulation from day one is, as we referred to a little bit earlier, hell on earth. So the church is putting a lid on the present day of evil, but this European leaders conglomeration is going to play a role in the tribulation.
Here's what I think is so interesting. We are seeing some major shifting taking place in Europe today. Now, the European Union has been around for a few decades. It formally became established back in 1992, and it has added members over the years. There are now 27 members to the European Union. But what's been difficult is people all over Europe are still vested in their own country, their own local region. They tend to be focused on themselves. They held the European Union with a disdain or, oh, it's just that group out there somewhere. The English were focused on the United Kingdom. France was focused on France. Germany was focused on Germany. People were still very involved in regional politics. Politics at the European Union level, people were very apathetic toward it. They weren't very enthusiastic about voting for a European Parliament member. Well, all of that changed with COVID, because the different governments across Europe all responded in different ways to COVID, and there was so much confusion. All of a sudden, the level of interest that Europeans had in the European Parliament went up, because they were saying, look, we need to all have a unified response to how we handle these crises. And now there are other crises coming along, like, for example, Russia shutting off the natural gas supply to Europe. So now what happened? The president of the European Union goes to Israel and draws up an agreement. We're going to buy natural gas that's supplied from Israel. It's going to go through a hub in Egypt, and it's going to come up to us. And all of a sudden, we're beginning to see a change where instead of the focus on the president of France, the president of Germany, or whatever, we're starting to see a lot more attention paid to the president of the European Union. We're starting to see the European Union take a more active role in what's happening all across Europe. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has galvanized Europe to work together and say, hey, we need to respond together. The energy crisis, same thing, is making Europe respond together. For the first time in a long time, we're starting to see Europe galvanize and work together as a unit. And that naturally makes the path easier for the Antichrist to come up and establish his one world government, where you have everyone starting to think alike and wanting to work together.
Thank you. Very well said. Totally agree. Folks, I think the point is keep your eyes on Europe. And to my American audience, I know we're very America-centric here in this country. But actually, the end time activity is Middle East and Europe. And Steve, clearly we're watching one of the primary signs here is the decline of America. Well, who thought that the decline of America, let's just look at the last year and a half, could happen as fast as it has happened under a certain political leader who will remain unnamed?
Yes. Earlier in the show, you were talking about how Israel is soon going to have its fifth election in 3.5 years. So we see a lot of chaos taking place in Israel. And we see a lot of chaos taking place here in the United States. Sadly, a lot of this is political infighting, where people are disagreeing with one another about how things should be done. And even the current administration that is running the country is not very clear in communicating what it desires to do. It will use executive orders. It will enforce its opinions on people. What is very striking is the recent Supreme Court rulings that have come out, especially the Supreme Court ruling on abortion, how the president and his administration reacted to it, some of them saying that it was a illegitimate decision for the Supreme Court to reach. Now having a government that actually says that another branch of government can't rule a certain way, what we see is government overreach growing all the more in our country. At the same time that government overreach is growing, we're seeing internally within our country political infighting, polarization. People are becoming split in ways that they never have before. And it's very hard to get people to work together in those kind of conditions. And what we're seeing in Europe is a little bit of the opposite, where people are working together more. Now, there is a lot of diversity in Europe. There's a lot of disagreement about the way things are done, but they are working together. We seem to be becoming more divided. Israel's becoming more divided too. But even in the midst of all that strife and division, the one thing we can take courage in is knowing that none of this took God by surprise.
Yes.
God knows what's happening. all of this is unfolding exactly as he ordained it would.
Everything is falling into place, folks. That's what Steve and I are saying this hour, because I say that week after week on this program. Nothing's happening by accident. It's happening by design, designed by the great creator himself. Steve Miller, I want to thank you for all you do. Thank you for your book, Foreshadows, and for what you do there at Harvest House and the wonderful products that you put out there. I want to go out, and folks, you've heard me with this saying quite a bit, but it's so appropriate at the end of this hour. And it reads like this: when the time was right, the sea parted, the walls fell down. The lions went hungry, the sun stood still. The waves were calm, the stone was rolled away, the clouds were parted, and the Lord ascended. And when the time is right, the King of Kings will return. God is never early, and he's never late. He's always right on time, and his plan for you is good. If you remember nothing else from this hour, folks, remember that everything that's happening is by design in the world and in your life, and that his plan for you is good. I want to thank you for listening. We will talk to you again next week. You are the love song
we'll sing forever. Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. You and I have a front row seat to watch so many things the Bible predicted for the end of the church age and the gearing up of Daniel's 70th week. We are watching the pawns on the chessboard be moved into their proper place so that everything can fall into place.